Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, June 30th, 2018. This is episode 1501. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Lighthouse. With 3D and AI, Lighthouse is the home security camera you just ask. And for a limited time until July 9th, get $100 off just by going to www.light.house. That's light.house. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yes, once again, time to talk about tech. Computers and the internet and home theater and, you know, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that stuff, all those gee-jaws, gizmos, and gadgets that are animating our world. 8888-ASK-LEO is my number. Let me tell you that again so you can call 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada, outside that area. You could still reach me, but you'll have to call using Skype or something like that. 888-ASK-LEO. And anything on your mind, anything you want to talk about, I'd love to talk about it with you. You know, the World Cup. let's see. No, I guess we won't talk about the World Cup or NFL football or home improvement or real estate. No, we'll talk about technology. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Let's see. What happened this week? Big week in the news world. It was kind of it's interesting to see Amazon slowly expand its reach. This week they paid $1 billion for an online pharmacy. We don't know exactly how much. $1 billion. And all the companies, all the pharmacy company stocks just went, ah, what? Amazon wants to get in our business? Oh, no. Thank you. Google just said hi. That was another thing that happened this week. Google Home stopped working for a few hours. Now, that's a scary thing, because if you start getting reliant on Amazon's Echo or the Google Home, and you suddenly she says, I can't help you. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Almost as bad as if your TV set went out. It did. Comcast had an outage on Xfinity, and this is a weird one. Not one, but two of its back, I guess you call them backbone providers. CenturyLink's Level 3 and something called Zayo, which is in the New York area, had their fiber cut. Now, the company was quick to say they're unrelated incidents, but they both happened at the same time. Fiber, you know, the glass fibers that are, they're all underground. They're not particularly vulnerable, but they can be cut and have been cut by backhoes. And you know how they say, you see this everywhere, don't dig until you call us, because there's stuff under there. Fiber lines got cut about 2 in the afternoon on Friday. And so anybody who subscribed to Xfinity Internet was down, and it takes a couple of hours. I've seen them try to splice fiber. It's not an easy thing to do. You can't just, it's not like regular cable where you just, you know, cut it, tape it together, and put a new one in there. You have to one by one go through all the fibers in the bundle and slowly join them together. So it's not an instantaneous thing. We had a fiber cut. It took out our phone lines here a couple of years ago. I remember that because our phones come in over fiber. NSA says, oh, whoops. You know, the National Security Agency for the last 9/11, so I guess the last 17 years, has been logging virtually all phone calls and texts and emails. They can't log, they don't hear the contents of the calls. I don't know if they see the contents of the texts. They might. emails they might also. But they log them in case, you know, they want to go back and see, you know, did a terrorist have communications with anybody in the U.S., that kind of thing. They make a huge data collection, huge amounts. But I have to commend the NSA because last month they figured out that there were some technical irregularities in the collection from phone companies of so-called record details. It's metadata showing who called whom, who texted whom, when they texted. The contents isn't in there, but the other stuff is. And it turns out they got some stuff they had no authority to receive. Now, I'm actually encouraged by the fact that they not only said this, they admitted it, and now they're deleting it. Hundreds of millions of records just being deleted. This is all stuff collected initially under the Patriot Act and the Freedom Act. This was a secret program for a long time. Bulk collection of all records and metadata in the United States. They use the data to analyze social links between people so that if there's a terrorist act or they're looking for terrorists, they can see, you know, who knows who calls who, and so forth. Back in the day, it was secret. It was called Stellar Wind. George Bush put it in place after the 9/11 attacks. And then the Patriot Act. These were the leaks that Snowden revealed in 2013 that became unsecret in 2013. But Congress responded by enabling it again with the Freedom Act. The idea was the Freedom Act allowed collection of bulk data, but only specific records. And the judge has to agree that there's a reason to target somebody. And under that Freedom Act, in 2016, the U.S. National Security Agency recorded 151 million calls. In 2017, don't know what happened, 534 million calls all of a sudden. And apparently they didn't implement the Freedom Act properly. It's set to expire next year. Of course, Congress has been renewing it year after year. And now they have to purge the data. Some people say, well, that just proves they're collecting, you know, that that's the danger of collecting data. Others say, well, look how honest the NSA is. I'm kind of impressed. Maybe they got caught. I don't know. But they said, eh. I've been reviewing, and you may know me as somebody who likes teeny-weeny computers. I've been reviewing, and you've heard me talk about the Gemini from Planet Computers. It's just a little PDA that has a full keyboard and a computer. I had the Pocket computer from GPD, the GPD Pocket. Remember that? I've got a new one that I'm reviewing. Turns out, maybe this is a cat. Maybe it's not just me. Maybe it's not just my fascination. I think what's happening is people are looking at mobile phones and saying, yeah, I like having a computer that's always on, always connected, and always in my pocket. But I want more. Now it looks like Microsoft's been working on something, Project Andromeda, that's a pocket computer, about the size of your smartphone, but it opens up, and the screen stretches over the hinge. So imagine a screen that's double the size of your phone. Just open it up, and there it is. It's called a Surface device. That's Microsoft's name for its PCs. The Andromeda is being developed in secrecy, but it leaked out. My friend Paul Thurrott had a story about it. We've been talking about it a little bit. I think that's an interesting category. Are you interested in a little teeny-weeny, maybe a little bit more than a phone? 8888 Ask Leo. Those are some of the stories we could talk about. There's a lot. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Once again, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Website, techguylabs.com. That's free, no sign-up. You can check it out. Anything I talk about on the show, you could find a link there, techguylabs.com. Your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, are you going to Vegas to see Gwen Stefani? She's just a girl, you know. That's the name of the song. That's why I said that. I think it's ironic. 8888 Ask Leo. I don't know. It's ironic, right? Isn't it? I think it is. Kim Schaffer.
What's that?
She's just a girl.
Oh.
I think the whole point of that song is...
Well, that song's really old.
It is old.
That song's, yeah.
Yeah. That's but she was funny. Very, very young when she did. Yeah. She's got a residency in Las Vegas.
Oh, does she?
Yeah. Just opened. I'm sure that's... Michael Cozio, when he plays the music, there's always a meaning.
Something. I wasn't picking up on it today, but I was too distracted by your shirt, which is making me so happy, and that doesn't translate to radio, but I want to be
on
festive. Your shirt. It's a party.
You want to be on my shirt.
I want to be on your shirt.
yeah, this is another one of these great shirts from San Miguel de Allende that my friend Winton sends up all the time, and this one says Oaxaca, Tulum.
Yeah,
it's a party on my
like
shirt.
It looks like a fiesta. And,
well, it's, you know, it's the 4th of July week.
Yes, it is.
Party time, middle of the summer. How are you?
Good. I'm as soon as I leave here, I'm going to be attending a fiesta of sorts.
Nice.
So
lovely.
Yeah, it should be nice and about 101.
Oh yeah,
we'll
yeah. What can I start with? Who can I start with? I see there's a bunch
Florentina
of people.
Florentina in Spain. Since
what?
She's so far away, let's go to Spain
what?
First.
But oh, my God.
Looks like she wants to start a fundraising campaign
okay.
on Facebook and just needs a little assistance
lovely.
With that.
Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Buenos dias, Florentina. Or buenas tardes.
Hello, Leo.
Buenas noches, I think. I am well. How are you?
I'm good. I just want to start by telling you, you're my husband's hero. He's been watching your show since the late 90s when it was ZTV
yes.
back in the day.
That's right. Has he in Spain? Was he watching in Spain or was he in the States?
No. He was in the States.
Yeah. I didn't think we were on in Spain. Where in Spain are you?
I'm in Mallorca.
Man. Now I'm really jealous. Okay. Okay. Is it a beautiful day in Mallorca or beautiful evening?
It's nice and warm. Plus, the mosquitoes yes. are eating me alive, but that's beside the point. Listen, Leo, I'd like to ask you, how can I get the word out to the world to start a fundraising Facebook?
Well, Facebook actually is very good at fundraising. In fact, that's probably given that, you know, the people you're probably trying to reach are on Facebook. The number one way to do it these days. There are other, you know, choices. Depends what the fundraiser's for. There's GoFundMe.com. People use that to raise money, usually for themselves or something they're up to, or they need some help with medical bills, that kind of thing. Is this for a charity? What are you doing a fundraiser for?
Well, I've tried to GoFundMe, and this is the thing. The thing is, okay, we worked at a house for 10 years. And to a former functionary. A functionary is a person that works with the government.
Yes.
And our contract expired in March, this year.
Yes.
And the owner supposedly understood that we're going to, you know, leave his house, and he was okay with that. And then on May 10th at noon, they came to our house, knocked on the door with four armed police officers.
Oh, no.
A person to change the lock, in other words, a locksmith, and they gave us 20 minutes to pick our stuff and get out.
Oh, that's rude.
Actually, they threw all our stuff out.
Oh, no.
They ransacked our stuff. A lot of people robbed our stuff.
This is why I don't. And, I think stay away from governments. They're untrustworthy.
It was awful. It was awful.
I'm
the
so
thing
sorry.
Is that... you know, believe it or not, in this country, unfortunately, 2 years ago, they abolished the freedom of speech. In other words, if you talk or say anything against the government,
oh,
you will
no.
get fined 400,000 euros or
what?
Jail time. Oh, yes. In fact, there's a Spanish rapper called Valtonic with a Y at the end. That you could see it. I mean, he criticized the royal family, and he got 3.5 years sentenced.
Oh, that's not right.
Okay? We're talking about an artist jailed, okay,
yeah.
or to be jailed for expressing himself.
I see the article right now in El País. Wow, that's terrible. So this is why I really celebrate the First Amendment in the United States, where it's written into the Constitution that the government may not abridge the right of the people to speak. I think that's so important. And this is, you obviously don't have a First Amendment in Spain, and that's a shame. Let me give you a couple of links. Facebook. Well,
we've been homeless for like sleeping in our cars.
So you can, you can.
It was really tough.
You can do either GoFundMe. In fact, if you want to know more about GoFundMe, you can go to GoFundMe, GoFundMe.com /start. That's a place a lot of people go. The problem with it, of course, is people have to learn about it and then go to GoFundMe. And this is maybe why Facebook might be better. Facebook is definitely, Facebook.com/fundraisers is the page for that. They definitely will allow you to do this, raise money for yourself. It doesn't have to be a nonprofit or a charity. It often is. But I'm looking at the page. It says, create a fundraiser to raise money for yourself, a friend, or a nonprofit. And I have to say, this is something Facebook is very, very good at. Here in the United States, remember the couple last week that started the fundraiser to reunite kids with their parents on the border? And they said, we're going to raise $1,500. And the last time I saw it, I think it was $30 million, $40 million. And they kept raising the amount because people kept giving them money. And it all went to ISIS, which is a group that is, you know, not a real nonprofit, et cetera. And that's one thing I would caution if you're going to give money on a site like this. I don't know how much vetting Facebook does. The fact that they say you can raise money for yourself or a friend tells me they probably don't vet it very much. That's good for you, Florentina. But it's also something that should raise a red flag for donors. You really want to maybe investigate this and donate to people you know and trust and well-known nonprofits. But they have a lot of different categories. They have certainly categories for a personal emergency, which it sounds like you're going through, and I'm sorry about that, Florentina. So that's literally one of the categories is personal emergency. I just interviewed yesterday a professor of media studies at the University of Virginia, Siva Vaidyanathan, who's written a book called Anti-Social Media, and it's really a book about how bad Facebook is for us as a community. But he does say in there, it is genius at fundraising, that's one of the things it does really, really well. And the advantage it has over GoFundMe is that you're there. The people you want to reach are already there. They will see your pitch on their feed. And that's, frankly, going to be a lot more effective than somehow getting to them, maybe posting on Facebook, hey, go to my GoFundMe page. The only other thing I would look into, and I don't know what it is off the top of my head, is what percentage either takes. I would guess Facebook does not take any more than GoFundMe, and it may well be less. That would be my definite guess. Hey, good luck, Florentina. I'm so sorry that happened to you. And it's once again a reason we can celebrate, those of us who live in the United States, that we have a very good constitution. Coming up, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, one we need to defend at all times. Scott will talk about home theater right after this. Bump de bump. It's time once again for our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson. He's the editor at the AVS Forum, joins us every week to talk high tech and high def and HDR, high dynamic range. He's just all about getting high. Actually, this week I want to talk about, you had a good article on the AVS Forum this week about you call them commercial cinema subscription services. And until MoviePass came along, I don't think such a thing existed.
It didn't. That was the first one, as far as I know.
Yeah. I mean, there may have been, you know, kind of a theater in town that said, hey, give us $100 a month and we'll let you in any time. But yeah, MoviePass was kind of a miracle. Like, you pay them, well,
$10 a month.
And you can go to an unlimited number of films.
Well, one per day.
Oh, well, okay. That's fair. Although I have to admit, in my youth, I may have.
You might have gone to a movie a day.
Bought a ticket. Well, more. Got, you know, to a multiplex and theater hopped a little bit. You remember those days?
I do remember those days. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Well, this all came out of, really, I think, from the home, from like Netflix subscriptions.
Uh-huh. All you can eat. Yeah.
All you can eat for one low monthly fee.
I never understood how they thought they were going to make money. And in fact, I think they've been kind of financially in dire straits of late.
You mean MoviePass?
Yeah.
Oh, they're in serious financial straits.
Yeah.
as I write in the article, they may be losing money on every sale, but they make it up in volume. So.
Yeah.
It's an old joke, you know? I mean,
they do some restrictions. You can't go to 3D or IMAX.
You can't go to anything that has an upcharge, right? So any of the enhanced presentations, strictly 2D, regular movie.
I wonder, our local theater now is upcharged for everything, basically. But it's really nice, you know, have reclining seats and they have food and stuff. And I'm wondering if that maybe was stimulated a little bit by MoviePass.
They
I know AMC
been.
Hated MoviePass. In fact, AMC has started their own.
Now, isn't that interesting? Because MoviePass worked at AMC, but as you say, AMC didn't like it, and they've now got their own subscription service. They call it AMC Stubs A-List.
And how much does that cost?
Well, that's quite a bit more expensive. That's $20 a month.
Okay.
And it gets you three movies a month. A week.
Three a week's plenty. Come on, how many three movies are you going to go see?
Exactly right. And that does include any of the upcharge formats. So IMAX, Dolby Cinema, which is my favorite, of course, 3D, you know, any of those things is included in this.
So if you live near an AMC cinema, I mean, you have to live near one.
Yeah, really.
This is actually not a bad deal. I mean, a movie ticket is $10-15, depends on where you go.
Well, and a Dolby Cinema ticket, I spent $20 a ticket.
So this would pay for itself with one movie.
That's right. Now, AMC is the world's largest commercial cinema chain. So, you know, you probably do live near one.
Yeah.
And if you go out to the movies, for me, it would be going out to the movies a couple times a month. And it would more than pay for itself.
Oh, yeah. You use your smartphone. They have an app, right? That's how
Yeah, exactly. And this is another thing that's good about the AMC system as opposed to MoviePass. With MoviePass, you can't buy tickets in advance. You have to go and buy them basically on your smartphone. And they give you a kind of a pseudo credit card that you have to use. And you have to get it within 30 minutes of checking in at the theater. With AMC, you can buy tickets, reserve tickets up well in advance.
I love doing that. I haven't waited in line for a movie in a long time.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I really like that. Yeah.
Now, there are a couple other chains that have their own. Well, there's one other chain that currently has its own subscription service. Cinemark has what's called the Movie Club for $9 a month. But you only get credit for one regular 2D movie per month.
Oh, come on.
Well, okay. So that doesn't seem
that's
like
not
such
a pass
good
at all.
Yeah,
just,
I know.
That's paying ahead to go see a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And you get a little bit off. Okay, forget that one.
Now, there's another multi-chain service that's a direct competitor to MoviePass called Cinemia. S-I-N-E-M-I-A. Cinemia.
That sounds like a bad horror film. Cinemia. You'll never be so scared.
Get out of the theater now.
What do you get for how does Cinemia work?
Well, Cinemia works is pretty interesting. They have actually four different plans. Two of them are called Classic, and that only applies to 2D regular showings. And the other two, the higher two plans are called Elite, I think. And they let you get into some enhanced showings like 3D, IMAX. They say not Dolby Vision, but I know of at least one subscriber who says, yeah, I can get into Dolby Cinema, no problem. So there's
But this is a couple or three movies a month.
Yes, correct.
I guess realistically, that's probably how many I go see. But the whole idea of these to me was all you can eat.
Yeah, exactly. And MoviePass does have it over everybody else in that regard because they let you see a movie a day.
Yeah. Although I would do if I were near an AMC. We don't have an AMC theater in our little town. Mm-hmm. If we did, I might consider that because that seems like a pretty good deal. And frankly, three movies a week is more than I would ever see.
More than enough.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Plus, MoviePass is only for one person. You can't actually, you know, like if you go with your family or a group of friends or something like that, you can't get tickets necessarily together. You can't buy the tickets all together anyway.
Oh.
Cinemia offers family plans up to six people.
Yeah,
it costs more per month, but they do offer a mechanism for doing that. And I think the AMC and the Cinemark also both let you buy quote unquote companion tickets at the same time. So we're still in the very early stages of this business model, shall we say. And I think the reason they're doing it is to try and get people back into the movies. You know, we're at a 25-year low in terms of attendance at commercial cinema.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, you could have predicted it, but I didn't realize it was that bad.
It's that bad. Yeah. Now, revenues are relatively flat. Why? Because ticket prices have gone up.
That's how they made it up. Now, let me ask you this, because I never really understood the economics of a movie theater. I always thought that the tickets went to the movie company, the studio, and the popcorn sales, the concession sales, goes to the theater. But that obviously isn't the case. Do you know how it works?
I don't, actually. I always thought the same thing.
Yeah.
And if MoviePass...
Yeah, they can't work that way.
They can't, where they're losing money, and so therefore the studios would be losing money.
If you saw what they charge for popcorn, maybe you wouldn't...
Well, I always believed that the majority, even if the ticket sales went to the theater, the majority of their profit came from concessions.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
$8 for a 10-cent pop, 10 cents worth of popcorn and fake butter?
And fake butter, yeah. Exactly. Plus the fact, another reason why I think movie attendance is down is that what we can get in our home theaters is so good. In fact, we get HDR at home pretty easily. And the only way to see it, even partly, is in a Dolby Cinema or an IMAX laser.
Yeah, no, I have a better home theater now than the cinema, and I'm close to the screen, so the screen is just as big. The floor is not sticky if I make sure to mop it.
Somebody's not kicking the back
nobody's,
of your chair.
Yeah, nobody's talking on the cell phone. If I want to get up and go to the bathroom, I can pause the movie so I don't miss any. And frankly, my popcorn's much, much better. So I understand why the decline. And the theaters are responding in other ways. We have reclining seats, and they're serving wine and food. Interesting.
I never understood that, serving wine and food during a movie. I mean, this waiter coming by with your food in the middle of the movie? No thanks.
Well, at the Alamo Draft House, they have a ditch. So the waiter's below. He's walking through it. Anyway, I like the Alamo.
I see what you're saying.
And the tacos are excellent. Hey, thank you so much, Scott Wilkinson. Find more of his work and a whole article with all the details at avsforum.com. Describes all of these different subscription passes. Is there one you prefer?
I think AMC is the one I'm going for.
Me too. Sounds like it, yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. I think the nearest AMC, though, is 20 minutes away.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate part for you. If you don't live near one, virtually the only theater I go to is AMC. Because they have a Dolby Cinema.
Yeah.
And
that would be so cool.
By far my favorite form of commercial presentation.
Yeah.
The only laser IMAX near me is the TCL Chinese Theater, what used to be Grauman's Chinese Theater, the famous theater in Hollywood. But that's not AMC. That's standalone IMAX. So this AMC club wouldn't work with that one.
It's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. I find it pretty cool. Now, I didn't mention, you mentioned Alamo Draft House, and they actually have one coming up.
Yeah.
Next month, they're going to start one called Season Pass. And they haven't said how much it is yet. They're rolling it out kind of in an interesting way. They're going to start with one theater. Basically, you go to the Alamo website, you sign up for their waiting list, and if you're invited to be part of the beta test, then you get to go check it out. And they're going to try different pricing models and, you know, with these different beta tests in different places. The first one's in Yonkers, New York.
They it's interesting because I became aware of them in Austin ages ago. And they've really kind of taken over the world now. They're just everywhere.
Well, it's true. And this whole idea of food and drink served to your seat in the movie theater, I think it's a good idea if they build a theater where the waiters are in these ditches and they don't block
the movie.
No, they
are. It's pretty
funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have a little tray table and it's above them. And so they're below the screen. And they don't. I think they don't walk around during the movie either. I mean, I think they're pretty.
Well, I thought they did. Maybe I'm mistaken.
Well, and I don't know. I haven't only been to the original one in Austin.
Even if they're in a ditch and they're not blocking the movie, you're still distracted.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's coming there and putting something on your tray. You're going to go look down at that and you're going to not be looking at the movie. When I go out to the movies, I'm focused on the movie. I want to have that entire experience. So it's not for me, this whole paradigm of, you know, food and drink served to your seat. It might be for others, and that's fine. That's cool.
That's why I watch at home. The only time at this point that I want to go see a movie is if it's a big screen experience and I want the, you know, this Atmos sound and all of that stuff.
Sure, sure. Well, Dunkirk was an example of a movie that you probably would be good to see in a really giant theater.
We saw that in a big theater, yeah.
Yeah, although that was not in Atmos. Christopher Nolan specifically does not like Atmos.
Yeah,
there are some theaters, some movies that you really want to see on a big screen. Of course, the advantage of going out to the movies is sort of the flip coin of the disadvantages of sticky floors and people talking on their cell phone. On the other hand, you are having a communal experience with a bunch of people. And if they're into it, you know, it can add to the experience, in my opinion. As long as you don't have a kid kicking your seat in the back.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. It's interesting. Go see it. That actually even is more like for big fan movies to go see it in a crowd. That's maybe the biggest thing. Yeah,
that's it's a very good point.
Yeah, they
next week I'm going to see Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
It'll be funny.
I didn't see the original, so I don't know. But at least
I did see Ant-Man. Yeah.
Was it fun?
Yeah, like I thought it was great fun. I like the Marvel comics. You know, it's a couple hours of mindless fun.
So can you stick around to the top?
Yeah, you bet. Happy to.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Line one, Frank, Huntington Beach, California. Hi, Frank.
Oh, hi, Leo.
Welcome.
I just don't want to go back to old tech.
Okay.
I was wondering, buying ink for your cassettes, you know. You can buy them from just a couple of dollars to lots of money.
You're talking inkjet printers?
Yes, inkjet.
Yeah.
Right. So I was wondering if there's been any study done on ink.
Yeah, there's been a lot because it's very expensive. In some cases, more expensive than human blood. And I think you realize that when you're buying a printer and it costs $50 and two cartridge sets cost more than that, it becomes very apparent the business model for most inkjet printer manufacturers is give the printer away and make it up in the ink. And of course, there have been a lot of companies around that do one of two things. There's companies that sell inkjet cartridge refill kits that involve hypodermic needles and significant mess. And I really don't recommend those, not only because they are messy and they're a lot of work, but also because, you're not replacing the cartridge. And in many cases, replacing the cartridge is more than just putting more ink in the machine. Depends on the printer, but you should certainly check on your inkjet printer. Many inkjet printers, when you replace the cartridge, you also replace the print head. And that affects quality. So refilling a cartridge may not always be the best idea. It was way too messy for me. The other choice is that you can buy sometimes remanufactured cartridges, and I think that's fine, or third-party cartridges. But here's the rub. A lot of inkjet printer manufacturers have, you know, because this is their business model, have started putting copy protection chips in their cartridges, and the printer won't work if there isn't a special chip in the cartridge. And that means you can't buy third-party cartridges because they don't have the rights to make that chip, or they don't know the technology involved. It's literally copy protection. Well, I guess it's not literally. Well, maybe it is. I don't know. It depends what you call. Are we copying? If we're making a third-party cartridge, I guess we're copying the cartridges to prevent against cartridge copying, to make sure you buy. And, of course, all the printer companies will say, well, no, we don't do this for financial reasons. We're doing it to protect you, the user, so you don't get junky third-party cartridges. My experience, if you can buy third-party cartridges, has been fine. remanufactured cartridges. But again, you want to pay attention to the printhead issue. If and you got to, it's hard sometimes to figure out if your inkjet does this. If you want to, you know, buy third-party cartridges and it does, you know, it doesn't replace the inkhead in printhead. You're buying somebody's used printhead in effect with a remanufactured cartridge. You might every once in a while buy a new company brand cartridge. If you don't mind using the the hypodermic needle and injecting a cartridge, I guess that's a legitimate way to go about it. There always is a little hole for putting ink in. That's how the company does it, manufactures the cartridge. There's also companies will say, well, there's substandard ink. Again, that's not been my experience, but that's maybe a possibility your print quality go down. The only way to do it is to experiment. And if you find, I mean, I used to buy third-party cartridges. Now, I have to say our sponsor, Epson, first of all, they don't play those games with the copy protection, which I appreciate, but they also have those ink, those EcoTank. And I think one of the reasons they make these EcoTank printers is specifically because, well, now we don't have to sell this cartridge, which is a consumable, and there's a lot of waste. Think about all the inkjet cartridges in landfills. We just fill an ink tank, and it lasts a lot longer. And in order to make that work, they have changed the head technology and so forth, and they coat the heads. They do sorts of some interesting stuff with that to make it work long term. I think that's a legitimate option, and it does reduce considerably the cost per page. And so ultimately, that's what you're looking at, the cost per page, or sometimes they call it the cost for consumables. And PC Magazine and other magazines will periodically do the calculation. How many pages do you get? How much does a cartridge cost? How much does a paper cost? Typically, laser printers, which the toner cartridges are, they go longer and they cost. They're a little pricey, but they go for 5,000 pages or the like. Typically, they'll be 4 or 5 cents a page. Inkjet cartridges can cost, you know, with the inkjet costs a page in an inkjet printer, sometimes 20, 30, 50 cents. And it really varies among manufacturers. So it's probably worth, if you're going to buy an inkjet, you know, worth researching the cost of the ink and the overall cost of printing. How much per page is what you're looking for? And then see if you can live with it. You know, I really like this printer. The cost was low. I don't print that much. I'm saving so much money on the printer itself that I don't mind spending 20 cents a page to print. That kind of calculation. I think it's completely reasonable. And then for light duty or where you don't mind spending a little more for the printer, you might want to look at laser as well. Laser is also a very good technology. Doesn't do color as well as inkjet. But yeah, I don't generally recommend refilling the cartridges. And we've over the years been approached many times. A lot of other radio shows like this one advertise cartridge refill kits and things. And I've been approached many times by these companies who want to do the advertisements, and I always say no because I just don't think it's a good idea. I'm not behind it. I'm against it. Ellie in Honolulu. Aloha, Ellie.
Aloha, Leo.
How are you today?
I'm hanging in. I use for the inkjets, I use a subscribe service. They let you know when you're running out of ink and they send you another cartridge.
I like that. I just go to the store and buy a ton. But you know the funny thing is I'm replacing my old work Force Pro printer from Epson, again a sponsor, with an EcoTank, and that means I have all these cartridges that I bought ahead, so I have to find a good home for them. I have found a good home. So anyway, what can I do for you, Ellie?
I'm having a problem. I got the HomePod, and I got two of them so that we could do stereo with the Apple TV, and we pair it up, and it works a little while, and then when you go back in again to use it, you get two different things, one on each channel.
Ugh.
So how do you get it so it stays paired?
No idea. you've updated the firmware, so you have you have the new stereo.
I'm a nut for that stuff.
Yeah, you have the new stereo pair capability.
Yep.
Yeah. Boy, I just don't know, because that was something that didn't happen until very recently. And while I do have two HomePods, I decided to keep one at home and one at work. So I haven't had the chance to do that. I don't know why it doesn't stay paired.
And they keep saying, well, it's still in beta, so you got to keep playing around.
There you
it.
Go. That's a good excuse, Apple.
Yeah, exactly. They should have fixed it before they released it.
$359 per speaker?
Yep.
Ellie, if you'd asked me ahead of time, I would say, there's better choices out there.
Well, I got it when it was on sale for $50 off
each one. Okay, well, there you go. Yeah, I don't have a fix. Maybe somebody listening does. Apple's fix is, well, it's not cooked yet. It's not done yet. I have to say, I think the HomePods, because they're limited to, you know, Apple stuff, iTunes, and, you know, I just feel like they're too limited. I think Siri is too limited. And gosh darn it, I don't know about you, but my HomePod, my Siri wakes up all this morning. I was watching the World Cup, and all of a sudden, Siri starts mumbling in the background. It's like, go home, Siri, you're drunk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I know that's not an answer. The answer was, don't use it. It's terrible. But Scott, you've got a lot better choices for stereo pairs for your home than that. I mean, those are not.
Oh, well,
those HomePods are $700 for, I mean, that's crazy.
For two speakers?
Yeah, that's nuts. And they're not good.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, they're good for what they are.
They're good for what they are. Small speakers. Speakers the size of a coffee can. But that's not how I would.
You know, I say if she was wanting to watch TV with them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just get a sound bar for a couple $100.
Yeah. Yeah. She's blind. What you don't know is Ellie's blind. And so, and I know because I've talked to her before. So the advantage of talking to the speaker is great.
Yes, of course.
That's the advantage.
But there's there are many soundbars coming on now that have
absolutely
Alexa,
including the new Sonos soundbar.
Yeah. The Vizios, I think, have it. A bunch of them have it.
All yours, my friend.
Thank you so much. Dr. Mom, Grandma, good to see you, and congratulations on becoming a booby. Do I like the new Sonos soundbar? I haven't tried it yet, so I don't know. Probably good. Sonos is generally very good. Pretty expensive, but generally good. we've been talking a lot in the chat room about more about these movie subscription services. I was just informed that Marsworm said that MoviePass now has a family plan coming. So that's good. At least they are working toward that. I think that's very good. What else did we have here? We had, somebody sent me a link to Canadians. There's a Cineplex, I think, Cineplex in Canada will deliver concessions, movie theater concessions to your home. I think that's hilarious. 'Cause as Leo was saying, you know, Is movie theater popcorn really better than the popcorn you can make at home? I don't think so. Hot dogs and nachos? I don't really want to eat that plastic cheese stuff anyway. So it's interesting idea, though. It comes from a movie theater. And this company called Uber Eats will bring you concession snacks in Canada. Would you want that? I don't think I would. I mean, yeah, okay, maybe it has a certain taste and a certain panache, shall we say. Dr. Mom Grandma had an economist article, sent me an economist article about Netflix. Netflix is moving television beyond time slots. Yeah. And national markets. Well, that's exactly right. And they've been doing it for a while. I mean, binge watching, its original content, certainly you can binge watch it. I think when episode one is posted, they're all posted and you can watch them all at once. You don't need to wait week after week after week. And this is just going to keep growing. And, you know, broadcast television is going to have to deal with that one way or another. Thank you very much. Steve in San Diego. Movie popcorn equals about 60 milligrams of saturated fat. CO Bra, you're exactly right. And somebody else made this point earlier that MoviePass is also going to institute an upcharge for 3D and IMAX and so on, but also just for blockbusters, big name movies like Star Wars or whatever. And that's, you know, they're going to start upcharging for that too. And I have to say that makes some sense because the way that they're currently structured, they can't be making money. They have to be losing money. And no company can do that forever. It just can't be done. So let's see. Oh, iPhone 87214. I like theater popcorn. I did not see your MQACD comment before. Sorry, I missed that. Keef 43, tasty plastic cheese stuff. Plastic cheese. Graveyard Tube is asking, have I tried any of the beam-forming sound bars? Yes, I have. And those are quite remarkable. How well does the technology work? It works amazingly well. I'm quite astonished, really, at how well that does work. It basically, beamforming is you have a bunch of little drivers, little speaker drivers arranged in a line. And with fancy digital signal processing and phase adjustments and so on, you can actually steer beams of sound in different directions with interference patterns between these little speakers. And so it actually makes it sound like you've got a surround sound system. Now, you know, how effective is it in to make sounds feel like they're coming from behind you? Not terribly, but extending beyond the boundaries of the sound bar, the physical boundaries of the sound bar itself and making it sound like surround sound, amazing. Amazing. Marsworm, MoviePass is also selling hats, hoodies, and shirts. So they're in the merch business. Maybe that's how they're making it up. Okay, so that's one way to do it. Sure, absolutely. Scooter X is unfortunately too far from an AMC. The closest one is at Universal City here in L.A. And that's a good one. It's got a couple problems for me. One is it actually costs for parking. Now that if you go see a movie, they refund most of that. I mean, I think the parking is $20. Last time I was there, it was like $20, and you get $15 back if you go see a movie. Still, costs you $5 to park. Most other theaters, it costs nothing. Many other theaters, certainly the AMC I go to in Burbank. Parking is free, so that's good. Plus, Universal does not have a Dolby Cinema, as far as I know. I'll have to check. Maybe they might have added one, but last time I looked, they didn't. They do have an IMAX, and you know, I actually saw Dunkirk there because they had a 70-millimeter film projector there showing Dunkirk in 70-millimeter film, which is how Christopher Nolan wants people to see it. But it was too loud. And also they have that gigantic floor-to-ceiling, eight-story-tall screen, which a lot of modern IMAXs don't. They're much more sort of normal-shaped screen, which is why some AVS Forum members call them LIMAX, which I thought was kind of funny. Dr. Mom, Grandma, there's no big chains near me. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Chris, I've only got 30 seconds. Chris Miami, what's the difference between IMAX 3D and Real D? IMAX 3D, they both use, well, it depends. If you're in a IMAX laser, it's a different story. But IMAX lamp-based projection and Real D both use polarization. So not much difference.
Thank you, Scotty.
My pleasure.
Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz, augmented reality. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area.
You can still use Skype to call us, as Florentina did from Spain. 888-827-5536. Back to the phones we go. And line four is Louie in Santa Ana, California. Hello, Louie.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I think you need to know that your commercial breaks are not going through. We can hear you guys talking.
I know.
Oh, is that? Are you doing that on purpose?
Yeah. All
right. Buffering question.
I thought you should have some entertainment on hold.
It's all in PG and not in Atmos sound.
Well, we're working on Atmos. all right. So, your question, sir.
MLB.com, the buffering to the Amazon stick is insanity. But when we transfer it over to the directly to the computer, there's no buffering.
So buffering is a side effect of internet speed, pure and simple. The reason you have a buffer on streaming media, by the way, if you call me on Skype, there'll be a buffer. Anytime you've got real-time audio or video, you need a buffer. Let me explain why. As you're watching your baseball game, it's being streamed to you over the internet in little envelopes of data called packets. And the packets arrive, if everything goes well, in order, so they can be assembled into a video stream and played back. But what happens if a packet, you know, your packet's 51, 52, 53, 55. What happened to 54? So there's a couple of opportunities, a couple of things you can do there. If you drop a packet, you could just have a dropout. And you'll hear this sometimes. People call on Skype, or you'll be talking to somebody over the internet. They get like that. That's dropped packets. Those are little chunks of audio that got lost. Sometimes things will stutter, and that's just filling the space where that packet was. So that's what a dropped packet sounds like. You know, I'm watching a baseball game, you know, you swing 18 times at the same pitch. So you don't want that. That's not good. So what every streaming player does, you can't do it, by the way, on a Skype call. And that's why you hear these artifacts on digital phone calls, because you don't want to wait 30 seconds for the call to start. But when you're watching a baseball game, and you notice this, when you first start a video stream or an audio stream with music, there's a delay, a little bit of time, while it does something called builds up a buffer. It's getting the packets right away, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It's getting them right away, but it doesn't play them right away. It waits till it has a certain number of packets in this buffer before it starts playing. Typically, it'd be 30 seconds. It's very dependent on the speed and the player and all sorts of things. So the idea is, well, I've got 100 packets ahead. So when one drops out, no big deal, because as long as it gets there before I've used up all of the buffer, I'm okay. Packets arrive out of order, too. 1, 2, 3, 7, 9, 8, 5, 4, 6. Well, we got to rearrange those. And 6, you notice 6 came at the end. So we're going to, whenever that happens, the video keeps playing because we're playing back, basically playing back in time, but we're losing a little buffer. So if you have a lot of dropout, a lot of packet loss, or packets are arriving out of order, your buffer gets eaten up. The baseball game looks good right up to the point where the buffer's done. You caught up in real time all of those 100 packets that you lost, you know, that you saved ahead. You saved up for a rainy day. They've all been used up. Now the player will stop and will rebuffer. You'll go, oh, all right. Well, you know, if you want to watch this game and you don't want stuttering, or you were just going to have to spend 30 seconds to fill that buffer up, get those 100 packets. And now we're playing again. We're playing back 30 seconds, but it gives me some leeway if packets don't arrive on time or they arrive out of order. Now, if packet never arrives, then you're going to have stutter. So you want smooth qualities. This is really important in video, in streaming audio. You're going to have to buffer. And if you see a lot of buffering, and the reason, so this is interesting, on the Fire Stick you're getting buffering, but you're not getting buffering when you're using it on your computer. Couple of possibilities. The fundamental cause is there's something about the internet connection on the Fire Stick that isn't as good as the internet connection on the computer. It's either not keeping up. So it gets to the end of the buffer, and then it says, okay, pause, we got to rebuffer. That's a sign of a slow connection. Or there's something about the connection. The packets are arriving late or out of order. And you can see that in statistics. Sometimes if you look at statistics on internet connections, you'll see terms like latency and jitter. These are ways of describing internet disorders that cause problems in the quality of the audio or the video. And a problem in audio and video means you're going to lose buffer and you're going to have to rebuffer. So a couple of thoughts. One, that Amazon Fire Stick isn't as, it's behind your TV. It's not as good an antenna. Doesn't have as good line of sight, perhaps, to your Wi-Fi access point. That's a bad thing. It may be it's not using 5 gigahertz. It only can do the 2.4 gigahertz band. That's very common in smaller Internet of Things devices like Fire Sticks. That could be part of the issue as well. Your computer, it's better placed. It has a better Wi-Fi card, and maybe it's using a better frequency or a better channel. All of that means it's not going to buffer as much because it's got a better connection. So how do you fix this? Well, you could get a – it depends on what's wrong, and it may just be that the Fire Stick's never going to be as good as your computer because it's a cheap device, right? How much did you pay for that? $40, $50? How much did you pay for your computer? A lot more. The computer has a better Wi-Fi card in it. That could be one problem. Could be where the Fire Stick is positioned. It doesn't have as good a view of the Wi-Fi access point. You might be able to fix that by moving the Wi-Fi access point so that if ideally line of sight to the Fire Stick, or getting an extending cable for the Fire Stick so that it goes, an HDMI cable. So it can be extended out from maybe behind the TV. Behind the TV is not a great place. That's where Fire Sticks usually end up. So, the answer is it's a bad internet connection. Improve it. But it's not at all uncommon. And it's not even uncommon to see different qualities of connections in the same room with different devices. That's not at all uncommon. How you fix it, well, that's going to depend on what's going on. Maybe just think about it. That Fire Stick, it's the size of a USB key. There's not much of an antenna in there. It's probably a very cheap Wi-Fi chip. I'm actually not surprised. You might get you can get a Fire TV, the Amazon device that's away from the TV and has a larger device, costs a little bit more, has more area for Wi-Fi. That might be better. Lots of things like that. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Can you fix the Fire Stick? I don't know. Coming up in just a bit, Randy in Temecula. Randy wants to know about old equipment from the 80s. Oh. I think we got somebody in the studio who might know a little bit about old equipment from the 80s. I'm not saying Mike's old. But he's an old TV guy. He might know a thing or two. We'll see if we can get some help from our studio audience. 8888-ASK-LEO. Don't forget our website, techilabs.com. Yeah, somebody in the chat room saying, Twisted Mister saying, maybe all you need is an HDMI extender cord, like a few feet extender cord. Get that Fire Stick out from behind the TV. That might be all it takes. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, line 2, Randy in Temecula. Hi, Randy.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for taking the call.
My pleasure.
I was one of the first people in cellular in the early 80s as a master agent in Los Angeles. And
say cellular, do you mean the first really mobile phones, right? Because the earliest phones were like radio.
I don't mean car phones. I mean the first cellular. Wow. In other words, I opened up in March of 84. And in those days, there was only...
It was Cellular One, right?
Pardon me?
Cellular One?
That was the Cellular One was not in L.A. It was Pactel, okay. and and LA Cellular.
All right.
But my point was, when I first opened up, I also had a company called CIA, Custom Interface Accessories, and people came to us to modify equipment for special uses. And I've heard you talk about the Pocket. They came to us to see what we might do, because we also made the first transportable phones, where we modified car phones, put them into special bags. We created the fast charging circuitry that some of the industry ended up using later on. If you remember, like the first portable phones, there was no charging. All you could do is plug it into the cigarette lighter.
Yeah.
And so that fast charging didn't exist before us. I had to contract an engineering company to come up with that circuitry that they said was so difficult to create, you know, intelligent enough circuitry to measure how the batteries, the speed of the batteries, the heat, and all of that kind of stuff.
Somewhere I have one of those phones you have over your shoulder with the big battery pack. Yep. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I sold those first instruments
Those are Motorola, were those?
No, I did all the brands. I started with Western Union. Oh, yeah. And did Panasonic and Mitsubishi, and I did all of them. I had custom leather bags made. So the transceiver under the car seat, we did into a quick disconnect, so it just quickly shoved in the bag. I had a special thing made for the handset, and we had the special battery pack with the fast charger. So you could just, in 1 minute, well, less than a minute, in 30 seconds, you were in the bag and out the door.
So, that's nice.
Come
a long way, I guess, is the point, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but here's my point, what I'm getting to and asking. I hope between you and your listeners, you'll have an answer for me. When Pocket approached me, I told them at the time, we're just so busy with other projects, it's going to be a while. And maybe 9 months later, I called them back and I said, you know, we're building stuff for AudioVox, for Nokia Mobira. We're just too busy. And they never got back to me. I have the whole Pocket line from those early days, unused virgin equipment. And I don't know who to tell, if there's any collectors out there that would like to see it. I just don't know who to contact.
Pocket. Is that the name of the company?
Yeah, the Poke Pocket.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember these guys way back when. Yeah.
So I have the whole, you know, it's like a mini computer. And probably, what, like an 8-inch keyboard and flip-up. And I have the world port that goes with it. I have the floppy cable to the brain, the circuit chips.
I will give you $20 right now, cash on the barrelhead, for the whole kit and caboodle.
Well, you know, I'm just trying to find some sort of a collector.
Yeah, you want somebody who has nostalgia for the old computer. Was it? How did you spell it? Was it P-O-Q-U-E-T? Was that right?
No, there's no U. It's P-O-Q-E-T. E-T.
Okay.
And this is unused. It's still virgin. The drive is still virgin. Everything's brand new.
You know, my suggestion would be, and I'm doing it right now just to see, is to see if anybody's selling anything like it on eBay. Because that'll give you at least an idea of the market for this. And actually, okay. I don't see anything on eBay. So that means either there's no market, or more likely nobody's got one, which means what you've got is more valuable to the right person.
Especially since it's virgin.
Do me a favor. I'm going to put you on hold and leave your email with Kim, and then maybe somebody will call. I'll become a broker for this. Oh, John's found one. Vintage Pocket PC handheld computer. This one's not working. $29. So
wow,
you'd get a. You know, my offer. I lowballed you. I'm sorry. I'd like to raise my offer to $35. No, I don't. I'm sure you're right that there's somebody out there, especially for one that's working in the. In 1990, this cost how much?
Gosh, I don't know. They brought it to us in '86, and you know it was in the thousands.
Yeah,
it was over $1,000.
$2,000 in 1990. The PC PQ0164. I don't know if it's exactly the same model, but somebody in the chat room found a listing for $2,000.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite a unit.
So I'm going to raise it to $40. Last offer. Best offer. Yeah, I'm sure you'll find something. But, you know, I'm going to put you on hold, leave your information in case there's some crazy collector out there going, oh, I gotta get that. That'd be great. Can you get Randy's address, Kim? And if anybody calls, then we'll have it for you. Good luck, Randy. There's a lot of that stuff lying around, and some of it is worth a lot of money. What was the top price the old Apple One? There aren't very many lying around. They sold an Apple One for, I want to say, $500,000, something like that. I don't think your pocket's going to get that. But nevertheless, you know, actually, I take it back. Charity auction for an Apple One, $70,000. But maybe it went off for a little bit higher than that. Oh, $905,000 is the highest bid. So, yeah, almost $1 million. But that's a special kind of memory, right? There were very few of them. It was not the Apple II that there were millions made, but there were only a handful of Apple Ones, the original Apple computer. Only about 200 ever made. That makes it more valuable. How many pockets were there? Probably a lot. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. We're going to get back to the phones in just a second. Sandy, you're next in Costa Mesa. She bought a refurbed computer from a guy named Randy. No, she wants to know if it's safe to use. I have some strong advice for people who buy used computers. That's coming up in just a little bit. Leo Laporte. Oh, and Johnny Jett, too, right? Our travel guru. You stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I didn't mention our sponsor for the show today, and I really must because they're so cool, and I use it, and I love it at home. I should show you my lighthouse. Do you know about the lighthouse? Light.house. It is, when I'm not home, I can see it's a camera, but it's so much better than a security camera. So let me show you my lighthouse camera. So I have it in my office, but it's pointed towards the door. So if anybody comes in the house, I can see what's going on at any time. But even better than that, the lighthouse is a very sophisticated camera. It's got a regular, you know, camera with, of course, night light as well, infrared. But it has a depth sensing camera. It's actually got the time of flight 3D sensing, similar to the LiDAR that's on the self-driving car. Why does it need that? Well, because it images the room. It can tell when things are moved. And because it has... it's smart, it can tell if it's a human or not. So I could see my daily recap. Nobody's been in my office. That's nice. But I can get even more sophisticated. A couple of things that are a must for me. Lisa, my wife, doesn't like it if there's a camera in the house when she's in the house. No problem. Lighthouse, you can set it up to turn off when somebody comes home or when somebody's running the Lighthouse app. I can see faces. That's a new face. I know who that is, so I'm not going to worry. But if that was a stranger, that's a face it saw. But even more than that, the Lighthouse is so sophisticated. It has artificial intelligence, so I can see all the things that have happened, go back in time. I have 30 days of video, and I can even have it ping me. Look what I could say. Show me video from this morning. Let me know if there's any... If you can say this, by the way. It will listen. Let me know if you see anything... while all invited users are away. That means when Lisa and I aren't there and something happened. It knows about pets because of this 3D time of flight sensor. What did the dog do when I was gone? How about that? Ping me if you see the kids with the cat. Yes, it knows about kids too. It knows about location. It is super smart. This is a great solution for anybody who wants to have a security camera in their house that's smart. It's the only camera that understands life is more than just a bunch of motion alerts. There really is nothing like the Lighthouse. Designed by a winner of the DARPA Grand Challenge, he's an expert in self-driving vehicles and artificial intelligence and LiDAR, and he's using all his skills to make an amazing camera. I've said for a long time it's the best AI home security around. And right now we got a deal. They're doing a kind of a 4th of July deal, $100 off. If you've wanted a lighthouse, go to www.light.house. I think you can just type in light.house, not .com, .house, and get $100 off right now, but only through July 9th. 3D sensing, AI technology, live streaming in 1080p HD, automatic night vision. Oh, I didn't even mention, there's a microphone and speaker in it, so you've got two-way talk. There is a security siren. You can trigger a siren. It's on your Wi-Fi, easy peasy to set up. You get the Lighthouse app on your phone. No matter where you are, you'll know what's going on in your house. Bank-level encryption, so your video data is private and secure. I have the camera turn off when I'm at home. You don't have to. I like that feature. My wife really likes that feature. She's worried she's going to, you know, somebody's going to see her walking around, you know, whatever. You know, I understand that, and I love it. I've tried a lot of cameras. It's the only one that lets me say, nope, when we're home, no photography, please. You get 30 days of history. You can use natural queries, so it understands what you're asking it, and it can show you. You could say, hey, show me between 9 and 10 yesterday. What was going on? And it will show you. Tell me if you don't see the kids by 5 p.m. on weekdays. There's no other camera can do that. So the kids come home after school. They should be home by 5 p.m. You want to know if they're not home yet, right? The Lighthouse will tell you. When it comes to security, Lighthouse uses AI to notify you only if it detects actual movement from people, maybe large objects like doors, when you're away from home. So you don't get a bunch of spurious fake alerts. You get only the stuff you really want to know about. Light.house. That's the website. www.light.house. $100 off, but only through July 9th. So don't delay. And if you have any questions at all, please just get it. I bought it, and I never turned back. I bought another one. We've got two. Light.house. $100 off right now. He's an everywhere man. He's a judge with hair better. He's a guy with no hair, man. He's Johnny Jet, and he's there, man. He's our traveling guru, Johnny Jet. And I'm guessing you're in the Bronx. It looks like you're in your skybox at Yankee Stadium wearing your New York Yankees cap. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Leo. It'd be nice to be in the Bronx. They're playing the Red Sox tonight.
Oh, that's right. It's a big game.
It is a big game. They won last night 8-1, and I am 42 miles away from Yankee Stadium. I'm in South Norwalk, Connecticut, where I grew up.
Oh, you grew up there. So does that mean you're a Yankees fan?
Yep.
Red Sox fan. I grew up in Providence.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's a problem. You stole the babe. You cursed us for 100 years. So Johnny joins us. He's probably one of the most famous travel bloggers in the world, travel gurus. He talks about traveling better using technology every week on this show, and you can find him at johnnyjet.com and on Instagram and Twitter. And I'm looking at your Twitter feed, and it looks like you're going on the Leo Laporte show soon.
Yes, right now. And actually, I just scheduled a tweet for in about 30 seconds. It's going to go off with all my show notes.
Oh, are you smart?
The apps I'm going to mention.
I've been wondering how you do that.
Well, actually, sometimes I just do it regularly. I forget and I do it live. But
what program do you use for that?
TweetDeck.
Oh, I love TweetDeck. It's free from it's Twitter.
Yeah, but you know what? I've been using TweetDeck for over 5 years. Yeah. I co-host the Travel Skills Twitter chat every Friday at noon Eastern. And, you know, we work with a lot of big sponsors, and we have to develop these questions, and we schedule everything in advance. And then that way we can just spend time answering questions and concentrating instead of trying to figure out, oh, my God, I got to send this tweet out then or right now.
A lot of people pay a lot of money for programs like Hootsuite and so forth. But TweetDeck's free, and it works, and it's web-based. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. Let's hope it stays that way. So I'm always trying to find cheap deals, obviously, and I'm always trying to find how to fly first class. And it's getting more and more difficult these days to get upgraded. Even when you're a freaking flyer like I am, they don't give free upgrades very much. So what you got to figure out is just buy a ticket. A lot of times they're offering cheaper first class tickets. So I found a really good deal this week, and it's still available, and you can go from now until the end of the year, actually until May next year when tickets are still being loaded. LA to San Juan, Puerto Rico. Get this, $365 one way, a lie flat seat on American Airlines. You stop in Miami, then another lie flat seat on American Airlines on a 767. The first one's a 777. And these, I'm seeing that you're looking at my blog right now. That's the actual photo of the seat. I've done it many times.
Comfy seat.
But normally, just to fly LA to Miami in this lie flat seat, the airline charges, you know, between $1,600 and $2,300 one way.
Why are these so cheap?
Well, the reason why is because I guess they want people to go to Puerto Rico because Puerto Rico is what's on sale.
Yeah.
So, that's a good reason. I love Puerto Rico.
Not the summertime might be a little warm. I don't know.
But I actually just put some on hold for August, September. You can go in January. You can go in February. They're still good for that. They're usually these have been looking like they're Tuesdays and Wednesdays. There are some, I think, on Saturdays. But you just got to play around. And the way I found this one was on Google Flights. And so I put in L.A. and I put in my connecting city as Miami. And I wanted to fly American because that's where my freaking flyer miles are. And I'm trying to get status for next year. And then you can just hover around different cities. And I know the Caribbean is sometimes a lot cheaper. And it's usually a lot cheaper to fly onward than stopping in Miami, which, again, it makes no sense. And that's actually called a hidden city trick, where I could buy the ticket to San Juan and then get off in Miami. But you have to have you buy a one-way ticket and you can't check a bag. But the airlines do not like it when you do that. So I'm going to San Juan. But, that would save you $1,200 just on that one little hidden city trick. But I'm not recommending that. Go to San Juan.
It sounds like more and more Google Flights is becoming a very useful tool for you.
They certainly are. But actually, I have another site what I like about Google Flights is also that you can track flights.
Yeah.
But the original one that started tracking flights is called Yapta. Have you heard of Yapta?
No.
YAPTA.com. And they started this in 2007. But now they just revamped it and they partnered with Skyscanner.
I like Skyscanner. I've used Skyscanner. I love that.
Well, and what I love about this tracking is that you can put in whatever airfare, whatever routes you want to go and the dates. And then you can put in the price you want to pay. And then it will alert you if that price drops below whatever you want to pay. So you need to sign up. It takes a minute to sign up. Just put in your information.
This is Fair IQ. Is that what this is?
Yes, that is it.
And then they have Room IQ for hotels.
I haven't used that one yet, so I'll explore on this one. But I've been using Yapta for a while, but they just revamped it with Skyscanner. And again, so you can already put in flights that you've already booked that you paid for, and they will alert you if the price has dropped significantly enough for you to get a refund, including the change fee. So they're brilliant with this. And Southwest is really good for this because they don't charge a change fee. But if you book a flight for January next year, you put it in on here, even though you don't book it through them, they will alert you if the price drops and that you are going to get some money back. So it's really well worth taking the time to sign up and to put in your information and put in your flights that you want to track that you already purchased and the ones that you're thinking about purchasing.
Very cool. Very cool.
So, yeah, I'm a big fan of these guys. And again, tracking flights is the way to save money. Almost every flight that I book, I track in advance, and I'm always trying to figure out if it's going to go down or up, and you really never know. But this will help you a little bit more. And it also gives you the history.
All of this is because the airlines are using computers to constantly adjust the fares based on, what's sold, what's not sold, all sorts of factors, weather. And so the only way really you can't do this by hand. The only way to really compete is to use a computer for your benefit.
Yeah.
Because they're moving them around. Yeah, that's really. And you usually, do you notice that you'll always get a drop? I mean, you'll often be able to save money after you buy the ticket.
Well, the one with the Yapta is that you can put in the price you want to pay. So then you can definitely save money. But the ones with Google Flights, they'll just say, okay, the one that you're tracking, there's a good chance it's going to go up.
They know ahead of time.
And they know. And so then that's when you go in and either buy it or at least put it on hold. So a lot of consumers don't realize that you can put a flight on hold for 24 hours or buy it. And then as long as you're buying 7 days or farther out, you can't do it within 7 days. But let's say I'm going to Puerto Rico next month and I see a really good deal. It's $365. I can buy it right now. And then tomorrow – in the morning, I wake up and go, what was I thinking about? I don't want that. I can the airline has to refund my money within 24 hours, as long as it's departing from the U.S.
This is why, you know, people say, why do you talk about traveling better with technology? This is exactly why. I think nowadays it's so technological. What the airlines, what the travel companies do is so technological. Somebody said it's like playing the stock market. You need instinct is good, speed is good, but an app is even better. Using your computer to help you.
And actually, I haven't used their app. I've been using their website.
It isn't an app, again, is it? Do they have an app? Because it looks like
I'm not even sure if they do.
It's just a website. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's yapta.com, YAPTA.com. I put it in the show notes. Actually, I didn't put it. I'm gonna hit send right now, and it'll be in the show notes or the chat room. Sorry, not the show notes.
It's in the show notes. Your magic TweetDeck script ran. Now, if people want to see this stuff, the easiest thing to do is just to go to johnnyjet.com, and he's got all the links there. He covers this stuff all the time. You can subscribe to his travel newsletter and follow him on Instagram and Twitter, because you never know how to fly to Puerto Rico in a lie flat seat for $365. Only Johnny Jet knows. Thank you, JJ. Safe travels.
Leo Thank Port, you.
The tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, the phone number, line one, Sandy, Costa Mesa, California. Thanks for holding on, Sandy. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no worries. I'm hoping you can help, and I think you can. I bought a used computer from somebody that I know other people who have bought from him in the past.
Okay.
But how do I make sure that there is nothing on there? I don't want to say spyware because I don't know enough.
No, you're right to worry. And by the way, the news is not going to be your favorite. Because often when people sell a used computer, part of the deal is, oh, and look at all the software it comes with, right? It's all set up, ready to go. But what you don't know, A, is, as you ask, well, what other software is on there, stuff I can't see? And B, if you even have legitimate license to that software. A lot of people who do this, I bet you this guy, if he sells it like on a regular basis, sells used computers, I bet you this guy is doing this. He's just put software on there unlicensed. And there's all sorts of problems you could have down the road. You have to reformat the hard drive at some point. You don't have the keys for any of that stuff. You're going to lose everything. Windows may or may not be licensed. You know, it used to be very common. I don't know if it's as common nowadays. But people would put Windows on a machine. It would run fine for 30 days. And then in 30 days, say, oh, this isn't a licensed copy. Send me money. And the guy's long gone. Now, is it Windows 10?
It is Windows 10.
Okay, so that's good news in that regard. You don't have a concern for that. And does it have other software on it?
It has Office.
So Office, you're not paying for Office. Pro. Did you pay for Office?
No.
Then it's not a legitimate copy of Office. It may be legitimate in the sense that it's a timed trial. And at some point, either in 30 days or a year, it'll stop working. Or it may be that he bought one copy of Office and put it on 100 machines. In any event, that's not a legitimate copy of Office. So because
I have to be aware of any way for this person to track what I'm doing on.
Yes, and that's the other thing, as you said, he could have all sorts of hidden stuff on there. So there is an answer, but it's not an answer you're going to like. The good news is because it's Windows 10, you can format the hard drive in that computer and install a clean version of Windows 10, but you're going to lose Office, but you don't really own Office. You're going to lose any software that's on there. You're going to go back to Windows 10. What other software is on there?
That's pretty much, Adobe Pro.
Of course. Yeah. Adobe Photoshop, Premiere.
I don't know which one it is.
Yeah.
It just says Adobe Pro.
Yeah, this is what the guy does. I bet he advertised it with all this stuff, right? Comes with Office and Adobe. Yeah. Well, he's a crook. That's stolen software. You don't own it. And you'll have trouble in some way or other at some point. And because he's already of dubious ethical qualities, you might be concerned about other things that's on there as well. So the only thing to do, the only right thing to do for your point of view to protect yourself and from a legal, ethical, moral point of view is to format the drive. The hardware is yours. You bought it. That's the good news. But anytime you get a used computer, I would do this. Anytime. Even if you got it from Aunt Maud. Because you don't know. Maybe Aunt Maud didn't have the, you know, was into weird sex and went to strange sites and downloaded weird malware on. You don't know what Aunt Maud's been up to. So, no, or just she wasn't sophisticated enough to protect the computer. And there's, you know, the worst imaginable thing could be on there, which is called, it's not very common, but it's possible, is a remote access Trojan or a rat. And, you know, this, I hate to even talk about these because this is used by, you know, other media types to scare you. And it's not, you know, but it is doable. There are such things exist where somebody could put a hidden computer program on your computer that allows them to turn on your camera and microphone without your knowledge. I don't think it's that common. I think that's a scare tactic. But a lot of people, including, by the way, Mark Zuckerberg and the director of the former director of the FBI, have tape over their cameras because they're so worried about these things. So you don't, and there's no way to know, you know, you could bring it to somebody who's maybe an expert in this stuff and he can look for it and maybe he'd find it, maybe he wouldn't. You don't know. So my suggestion, anytime you get a new computer, format the drive and reinstall. The good news from your point of view, this used to be more challenging because if it had come with Windows 7, it may well be that, you know, there's no license key on there. He didn't give you a license key. He's formatting, it means you'd lose everything. And you'd have to buy a copy of Windows 7. That's changed. Once you get Windows 10 installed on there, you're good. So this is a little bit of an advanced topic, but this is what I would recommend. First thing to do is Windows key X while it's running, while you're in it. Windows key X and select system. Because you want to make sure that it is authenticated, that Windows 10 is installed and authenticated. So, you know, if it's a trial version, it'll say that. If you hit Windows key X and go to system, it'll say Windows 10 trial. But if it doesn't say that, it'll say Windows 10 whatever version, home or pro. And, you know, it'll be legit. That's good. Once the computer is registered, authorized under Windows 10, you can then format the drive, erase everything, reinstall Windows 10, and you don't need a license key. So you do own that. You don't own Office. You don't own Adobe Pro, whatever that is. You don't own those. He put those on there, maybe even jacked up the price a little bit, but it's pirate software. So you don't own it, and you're going to run into problems with it. If you did erase the drive, for instance, you wouldn't be able to reinstall it because you don't have access to it. But that's what I would recommend. You can download a good copy, a fresh copy of Windows 10 from Microsoft itself. If you just Google Windows, but before you erase anything, go to your browser, Google Windows Media Creation Tool. Get the same version of Windows 10 you have, home or pro, on your system. That's why you're going to do that. Windows key X and click system, see what version you have. Make sure it's authenticated. If it's not, then you have to buy Windows too. You don't own Windows. But if it's authenticated, then you can download Windows from Microsoft. You'll be putting it on a USB key, and then you'll run the install Windows from scratch. There is an install Windows built in, a restore Windows built in. But again, if he is nefarious, he could put stuff even in that reinstall Windows that would reinfect your system. So what you really have to do is download a clean copy of Windows from Microsoft, put it on a USB key, boot to the USB key, install Windows, and before you install Windows, fully erase the drive. My recommendation is to repartition it. Go to the options and repartition it. Erase all partitions. Erase the drive. Nothing will survive that. You'll have nuked anything he put on there. You're going to put Windows 10. Now you have a legitimate Windows 10 computer. Any software you want in addition to that, you'll have to buy. Good news is Microsoft sells Office Home for, I think, the subscription for Office 365, you know, consumer version is $8 a month. It's not horribly expensive. Adobe offers, you know, if you have the Adobe Creative Cloud, that can be thousands of dollars a year. I do the photography version, which is Photoshop and Lightroom, and that's $10 a month. But you have to pay for that. That's not, you're not getting that for free, even if he said you are. Unless he, you know, maybe he gave you, I don't know, a piece of paper that has all the subscription information. even then, you still want to wipe it, but then you can, you know, re-download it through the subscription. My guess is, and I would guess the practice of people like this is, they go out and they buy a boxed copy of Office. You can still get that for $800. And they maybe get an older version of, because Adobe no longer sells its software off the shelf. You have to subscribe. But you can get an older version of Photoshop, or I don't know what Pro is. I'm not sure what you've got. But you get an older version of that. Install that. Use the serial number. He types the serial number when he installs it. Even if he does that, though, at some point you're going to get a message saying, you know, there's other people using it, or, you know, you got to renew. Or it's not you're not going to get to keep it. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Lepore here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can still call outside that area. We had a call at the beginning of the show from Spain. You just use Skype out, and it won't cost you anything. The website where everything we talk about is written, engraved into stone tablets by James DeRuvo, who's the fastest scribe in the business. James writes that all, and we put it all up at techguylabs.com. And we don't charge. It's not a subscription. There's no fee. There's no paywall. I don't believe in paywalls. We have great sponsors who pay for everything, so you don't need to worry about that. Everything's free. Just go to techguylabs.com. And I mention that, so if you hear something and you're driving and the kids are in the back seat, and I don't want you to try to remember or write something down. Just remember this, techguylabs.com, and it'll all be there. Also, I don't want you yelling at the radio if I'm wrong. If you say, I got a better, Leo, you're full of, you. First of all, I can't hear you, which is probably a good thing. But second, there's a place to do it. You can go to techguylabs.com, and every show, this is episode 1501, every show is on there, and then each show is divided into hours, hours 1, 2, and 3, and each hour is divided into segments or calls, and you can just go right to that particular offending segment and type a comment. Why I oughta, you're just wrong. And that's great. We love that. That way, and the site will stay free, and it's always free. It's got great search. That way, everybody can find anything, and you can go back in time. You don't have to even have been listening to a show and say, well, what does Leo think of this or that? And you can find that. TechGuyLabs.com. We also have a great chat room. I should mention them because they were very helpful during the break. They're at irc.twit.tv. About 500 people in there, you give or take, helping me by listening to the show and answering. And I was wondering what Adobe Pro might be, and the chat room said, oh, she's probably talking about Adobe Acrobat Pro. Ah. So Acrobat, you probably know the Acrobat Reader. That's used to be in the old days. You don't need it with Windows 10 anymore. But in the old days, if you got a file in a certain format called PDF, it's very common for people to send files around that way, legal documents even. You needed a PDF reader, and most people downloaded Acrobat Reader. That was free, but Acrobat Pro is not free. In fact, Adobe charges a lot, $15 a month. $15 a month for Acrobat Pro. So she said, our caller at the end of the hour, last hour, said, I bought a used computer, came with Windows 10, it came with Microsoft Office, came with Acrobat Pro, free. But it's not free. And that guy, I guarantee you, who sold you the used computer didn't pay for it. And if he did, you're going to be using it, and one day it's going to say, I'm sorry, you can't keep using this. Somebody else is using the serial number. So that's going to be the problem. And so you didn't get any of that stuff. It just was a lie. And she was worried because she said, well, is there any way to know that he's not doing anything else? Well, somebody's going to lie to you about that. Who knows what he's up to? So thank you, chat room. It is, 15. That's a lot of money. The reason they charge that much is because people use it to create PDFs. So if you were a law office, for instance, and you were creating legal forms or legal documents, so, yeah, well, that would be reasonable. But not end users probably don't need to. Windows 10 can read PDFs without any additional software. It just opens Microsoft's Edge browser that can read PDFs. And you can always print to a PDF. I'm pretty sure that's built into Windows 10 as well. I know it is. So you can create PDFs. You can read PDFs. You don't need to go out and buy any special software. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. We go on to line three. That's Robert in Southern California. Hi, Robert.
Hey, how are you, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Wasn't aware you were coming on this quick, but.
I didn't mean to surprise you. Would you like me to put you on hold?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay.
I had been on hold, so I've been a listener from the 90s, from the ZDTV days and Screensavers, so it's kind of odd talking to you.
Thank you. Do I sound the same?
You do, absolutely.
I'm the same nerd I was back in 1998.
And our voices don't age, which is a good thing.
Well, so far, so good. I'm knocking on wood. Yeah, you don't want to see me, though. I'm just, you know, decrepit. So what can I do?
I watch you on Twitter as well.
Oh, you know. All right.
I see the behind-the-scenes stuff as well. So.
Yeah, we broadcast. We stream it all. I don't know why. That's crazy, but we do. So what the heck?
Good stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate you doing it. Thank you.
Hey, quick question in regards to password security. I got a couple of different issues. One being, how secure in regards to Windows password, just your actual Windows login? Does that have to be some crazy thing that you got to write down and remember and all kinds of different symbols and whatnot? Or is it just something simple and basic since you're behind a router and a firewall?
Exactly.
You're somewhat safe.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Somebody would need physical access to your computer to use it, or you would need to turn on something like file sharing that went out to the outside world, and I'm sure you're not doing that. So, yeah, you don't.
I am sharing files within my internal network.
Internally is fine. The router's protecting you. Yeah, yeah.
I'm using TeamViewer as well to access
it
from
the outside. But you use a different password for TeamViewer.
Yes.
Yes. That should be secure.
Okay.
But your Windows login, in fact, Microsoft makes it pretty easy to log in. You can use a PIN, you can use a photo, you can use an image. Because in general, the thinking on this is, if somebody has physical access to your computer, you're in deep trouble no matter what.
Right.
Right, because who knows what they're going to do. They could put a little, it'd be easy to do, a little tiny dongle in between where you plug your keyboard into your computer right there that would log everything you typed. There's all sorts of things you can do if somebody has physical access to your machine. Then all bets are off. Now, one thing that is a good idea, if you're worried about physical access to your machine, have a good password and also password protect your login, turning on the computer, and maybe even password protect the hard drive. And that's so if you had a laptop, right, there's always, a home computer, you're not taking it out of the house, but if you're taking a laptop around, I always lock down everything on my laptop with strong passwords, because, what if somebody steals your laptop?
Yeah, I'm talking about just a home.
If it doesn't leave the house, make it easy.
Got it. I have a pretty easy one on there. I didn't know how secure if I had to worry about
Here's what I would, so it depends now. Nowadays on Windows 10, in most cases, they want you to use your Microsoft account to log in, right?
Mm-hmm.
That should be secure. In fact, I would turn on two-factor on that. But they understand that people are going to use long, strong passwords for that. So they then allow you to say, but you can log into your computer with a PIN, five digits or whatever. And that's the easiest way. And that's sufficiently secure if the computer doesn't leave the house. But do have a strong password for your Microsoft account, for sure.
Okay, got it. And my next one was, in regards to the Google browser, it asks, do you want to save passwords? And I hit yes, and then and automatically, when you go to the website again, it automatically logs you in, such as your email and things of that nature, and even some of your banking sites. Some of the banking sites actually require the two-factor authentication, which I prefer.
Yes.
But sometimes
always use
it. Sometimes they don't have that, and it just logs me right in. So that's their vulnerability, I would imagine. But now, since Google Chrome is remembering all of my passwords to most of my sites, is there a security risk there, or what's the benefit of just allowing Google to maintain my passwords?
There used to be, in the old days, Chrome stored your password in the clear and unencrypted. And so if somebody had they had access to your computer, they could see your passwords. They literally could just open Chrome and look at your passwords. That's changed. As long as you use a password to encrypt your sync data on Chrome, I'm sure you do, it will be encrypted. And so it is secure. It's safe. I personally prefer to use a password manager because then I have passwords everywhere, not just in Chrome. I can use them for apps as well. And it's I would say, marginally more secure because somebody would have to have access to the password manager. So, but it's, yes, the Firefox, Chrome, Safari all now use encryption on their passwords, I believe. Chrome certainly, which is a good thing. You can't just open the Chrome browser and look at the passwords anymore. You'll have to enter an unlock password. Make sure you use that unlock password. These are the right questions to ask, and that's why two-factor is so important, because if somebody did get your password, they still would need a code that's sent to your phone or you use an authenticator. That's a great thing. Every site, you should do that. If you can do it, do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, more of your calls still to come. 8888, Ask Leo, the Gizwiz. Dick DiBartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer, half an hour away.
You still there, Leo?
Yeah, I sure am. Sorry, Robert. I had to take a break.
Yep, I got it. I did try out your LastPass with your Twit code, and I installed it for a short time, and I'm kind of thought to myself, why am I bothering with this whole nother app to do a whole nother, you know, program to do passwords when Google Chrome already saves everything, and it's just you click my favorites and boom, I'm in, and it's don't have to mess with the
I think a password manager is better, but honestly, if you're getting everything you want from Chrome or the operating system remembering passwords on the Mac, for instance, you can do it securely. Then that's, you know, as long as it's giving you everything you want. The problem is, of course, it doesn't work on your phone. It doesn't, you know, so it's up to you. But if it does what you want, it's absolutely, the good news is it's absolutely secure. But you have to turn on that encryption in the Chrome sync. You know, you want to make sure you give it a password.
I think I am. I'll have to.
If it doesn't sync without you logging in to us, and I use, by the way, might be a good thing to do is not use your Google password for that, but a separate password for that. In other words, you want to put as many speed bumps up for a bad guy as possible.
Got it. And that's just for on the Google sync part of it.
Yeah. Because that syncs passwords. Yeah.
Got it. And that's just in the settings of the browser?
Yeah, it's in the settings. Might be in advanced settings. This has changed. Chrome has gotten better, as I said, it used to be they'd put it in the clear.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Chrome, as long as really, it's more a question of if it has all the features you want. It is
because I'm using I'm pretty integrated into the Android stuff. Yeah. So my phone, when I go into the Google Chrome, it opens everything, and it's easy because it's all remembered. So I don't have to remember passwords all the time.
There are So there's always this kind of balance between convenience and security. And I can always come up with scenarios that are potentially risky scenarios for instance, Chrome keeps passwords in memory. So if somebody had access to your, if they had a program that allowed access to your memory, maybe using one of the new, attacks over hyper-threading or speculative execution, then in theory they could see your passwords because they're not encrypted in memory. But that's such a theoretical threat and would require really somebody was really trying to get your stuff. So you have to judge am I going to worry? Is this good enough or am I going to have to worry about if you want absolute the best possible security, then Chrome probably isn't it. But it's more than good enough for anybody who's not a spy.
I'm not doing anything on there but checking email and normal browser and normal bank.
If you're not a spy, I wouldn't worry about it.
No, I don't have any interest in that stuff. Yeah. So I don't even really care if someone gets into my stuff. I just don't like it when if they were to hypothetically get in and obviously, steal my identity.
That's the whole thing is you're acting as if, well, if somebody's got to get physical access, that's sufficient for most people.
Got it. Thank you, Leo.
Take care, Robert.
You.
Thanks for listening all this time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. I'm always a little torn talking about security. I was talking a little more with Robert during the break. He wanted to know if Chrome was good enough, if the Windows password is, how important is that? Does that have to? And there's always this kind of balance in security between what's convenient and what's secure. And really, it's up to you to decide what's good enough. Any security researcher can come up with a scenario where you'd be at risk. For instance, if you're using Chrome to remember your passwords, it's my memory on this. While Chrome does encrypt passwords, it does, when you log into Chrome, load those into memory in the clear. So your passwords are sitting in RAM unencrypted. Now, that's fine, because when you turn off your machine, they go away. You know, when you go home and turn off your machine, there's no passwords available to anybody. Somebody would have to have your login and then your Chrome login, et cetera. But there's a theoretical, there is a genuine theoretical risk if your passwords are sitting in memory in the clear that somebody could use an attack. There's a whole bunch of attacks called timing attacks now, especially problematic with Intel chips. Although all chips are susceptible to this, where they can, with some very clever, very advanced techniques, see stuff in memory. Maybe snarf up your passwords because they're sitting there in memory unencrypted. But it requires a pretty dedicated, sophisticated attacker. It's not a trivial attack. So what you always have to decide with security is how good is good enough? Now, if you're a journalist in a country where journalists are routinely poisoned, like Russia, maybe your standards for security are a little different than just some guy in Encino who's surfing the net. You have to decide based on your circumstance. And actually, I have a good friend, who's spent a lot of time teaching journalists and others who are at risk, dissidents in countries where it's not safe to be a dissident, how to protect themselves. And using WhatsApp ain't going to do it. You know, you have to really do a little more. You have to protect yourself a little more. But for most of us, the encryption built into Apple Messages or WhatsApp, the password protection built into your browser, that's good enough. You have to decide, how secure do I want to be? The problem, unfortunately, is that the headlines, the way news works, is we're always talking about, and I do this, and I apologize, the worst case scenario. All stuff they can do. Most of the time, it's not going to happen. We were talking earlier about remote access Trojans. And people, you know, a lot of news organizations love to, it's link bait. They love to scare you because you're more likely to click on the link and drive traffic to their site. You're going to be more engaged. You're going to post it on Facebook and tell your friends, oh my God, did you see what they can do? But is it genuinely a threat? And that's kind of, I think, what I should and everybody should probably keep in mind. Is this a threat to me? Is this something I'm going to worry about? I think for most people, the browser password is all right. I use a password manager just because I like to, it's easy. It's not harder than using a browser password manager. LastPass is also a sponsor here, but I've used it for years and I feel a little better doing that. But for some people, it might be more than you need. It might be overkill. Line one is Tom in Oceanside. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks
hey, I get to go buy a new TV this afternoon and thought you might be able to give me, you know, I'm trying to narrow down to my best choice here and thought you might be able to give some guidance.
Well, it all depends on how much you want to spend.
Right. I knew you were going to say that. I've heard you give pretty high praise to the OLED, you
okay.
know, and
so,
the B7 and B6.
Absolutely. If you're buying if you're willing to spend a couple of grand on a TV set, there's a couple of things I would say, first of all. Get a bigger TV set than you think. A lot of people say, well, look, I can get a 55 for $1,500. But a 55-inch set, if you're sitting 10 feet away from it, is too small. So
right.
You really want to get as big a TV, you know, depending on where you're sitting. If you're under 10 feet, you know, 55, 60 inches might be okay. I like 70 inches. I like a big screen because you want to give a movie theater experience. And again, this is another case of maybe you don't care. You know, maybe you're just watching the morning news shows. You don't need a 70-inch experience. So that's kind of what you have to decide. But I always think bigger than you think. I do fully believe that HDR, high dynamic range, makes a significant difference if you watch movies. Not going to help you, again, in the news shows, but it's going to definitely make a difference if you like to watch movies, if you want a home theater experience. And HDR means you're going to get 4K. But the thing to keep in mind, right, if you get 4K HDR TV, everything else has to be 4K HDR. You got to upgrade your Roku. You got to upgrade your receiver. You got to upgrade everything that's plugging into that TV, or you won't see 4K HDR.
Right.
If you want the best possible visuals, you want OLED, not QLED, OLED. And Isaac, right,
that was one of my questions too. Is QLED in the same?
No,
same scope,
it's an LCD. There, Samsung's tricking you because Q looks like O. It is not O. Q is Q. That's an LED backlit, which is good. You want, you know, FALD if you can, full array light dimming, which means that you'll have better FALD LCDs. They call them LEDs because they're using LEDs to light them. Those are very good. OLED's the best, but yeah, OLED's pricey.
Right.
So OLED or FALD, that would be good.
Okay. So I'm looking at a B7 for say $200.
Great TV.
Versus a Samsung. What is it? An NU8000 or something?
No,
like
no,
that.
No. Get the OLED.
14.
Get the OLED.
Okay.
Hey, I got to run. Hang on if you want to talk some more during the break. We're gonna take a break though. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. FALD, full array local dimming. What did I say? Light dimming? Yeah. No, local's key. FALD is...
Gotcha.
The idea is that your backlight can be dimmed appropriately. That gives you a higher dynamic range in an LCD than normal. But really, right, Nothing is as good as OLED.
Right. So my main question was, I know that the current version of the OLED in a 65-inch, you're going to pay, you know, $3,500. And so if I can get a B7 for $2,200, is that a good deal?
I got a B6. Say, you know, I got the 2016. And I asked Scott specifically, I said, are they better in 2017? Were they better in 2018? He said a little bit, but not appreciably. Okay. I think when I sit down and watch something like BBC's Planet Earth, which is 4K HDR, beautifully shot, if I sit down in a dark room, 8 feet away from my 70-inch B6, I don't think, oh, I wish I had a B8. Oh, I could have had a B8. No, man, I'm looking. It's so sharp, it hurts my eyes. It's so beautiful. There's nothing better. So, yes, you'd be very happy with a B7. If I personally would rather save the money by getting a year-old one than getting an LCD.
Gotcha. Okay.
You're going to love it. You're going to love
great.
It, dude. Now you got to get a Blu-ray UHD player. What you could do is get, if you got a Xbox One that has a Blu-ray UHD player in it, so if you like gaming, you got to get a 4K, you know, do you use a Roku or an Apple TV or...
Right. Well, I don't know if the Amazon Fire is 4K.
They have 4K Fire. They do, but you're going to have to upgrade to it.
Okay. So the
you
Apple
won't get it.
More... Okay.
Well, no, any of them. I mean, whatever you use, just that's the thing to keep in mind. And I use an AV receiver. I had to buy a new AV receiver that was 4K capable.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
You have to, everything in the chain, if you want, I mean, truthfully, you could say, all I care about is Blu-ray UHD, so I'm going to get a Blu-ray UHD player for $150, and everything else will be, you know, HD. That's fine, too. But if you want to see it HDR 4K, you need a 4K HDR input device.
Gotcha. Which is going to be the case for any 4K TV, right? The
yep.
Ultra.
Yeah, HD. That's true everywhere. Yeah, but you'll notice it. You'll notice it. I mean, you're do yourself a favor. Get the OLED. You'll really notice the difference. Right. It is stunning.
All right.
The difference is there is one thing. LCDs are brighter, so if you're in a room that you can't darken, that's a concern. I don't think the OLEDs are that dim. I think they're fine. They're much better than plasmas used to be. But LCDs are the brightest TVs out there. That's why often in the showroom they look better.
And that's what I'm coming from, is a plasma. That's what I'm replacing.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't replace a plasma with an LCD. You'll be unhappy.
Okay.
Enjoy.
Well, good. Well, thank you very much for your advice, Leo.
Yeah, you're going to enjoy it. It's great. Uh-huh. Yeah,
day.
You got to sit close if you really want to enjoy it, though, because you got to see the if you're sitting 10, 15 feet away from a TV, it doesn't matter if it's 4K. Although HDR might. HDR looks good. Yeah, I just, you know, if you can get some great 4K content, HDR content and you sit. And nowadays on Netflix and others, you're getting HDR. It's not as good as a UHD player. But you get an HDR, UHD disc in there. And that's why the BBC Planet Earth is a good example. And you're sitting nice close. You're sitting like 6 feet away. Oh, man, you're there. You're in the jungle. Or wherever. The spiders will scare you.
There's real spiders on that screen.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. The phone number. Back we go to line two. And Bob in Madison, Alabama. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Long-time podcaster, listener, and first-time caller.
Nice. What can I do for you?
I'm looking for a software recommendation. A year and a half ago or so, I had a switch in my house. I had three switches and a router. The switch went bad. I think one of the ports or something on there maybe went bad. It took me like several days to figure out that the switch was bad. I was wondering if there was some software you could recommend that would, like when I put it into a test mode, it would test all the routers and the switches in my house and would tell me one of them's maybe gone bad or something.
That's a great question. I do not know. I bet you our IT guy would know. I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Switch tester. Yeah, I mean, chat room, is there such a device that will let you test a network switch? It would be probably, I guess you could do it in software, really, because you just would send it a signal and see if it did what it was supposed to do. Let me just look on the web. There is, there are test switches. Look at this. Wow. I'm looking at an article of Tom's Hardware, How We Test Network Switches. Now, they're testing it more for benchmarks than anything else. But they have, it looks like they have some hardware involved and software probably as well. They have a testing suite. Yeah, like I would imagine you could test it in a test suite. So, because if you hit as long as you could direct something to a port, you'd know if you were getting the proper response back, that kind of thing.
Right.
I'll keep an eye on the chat room. If they say anything, I will check and keep listening. Maybe somebody will go to the website and add it, techguylabs.com. Testing network switches.
Yeah, when they go bad, apparently it's tough to troubleshoot them.
Sure. How would you know, right?
Right.
And they don't fail that often.
No, they, for the most part, work fine. But when they do go bad, it was a heck of a time trying to figure out which one was bad and whatever.
Yeah, I would Google Tom's Hardware, How We Test Network Switches. This is more, again, for performance than anything else. And then Mike Mann, who's sitting right across from me, says there's a company called GL Communications that makes software Ethernet and packet checkers. It's called Packet Check. That, okay. You know, I think it seems to me you could do it all in software. I don't know, but it seems to me you could do that all in software.
Right, and that's what I'm looking for, some sort of software solution. I got a second quick question, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
I'm wanting to get one of those mesh network systems, Eero. I've been hearing you talk a lot about Eero.
Yep, they're a sponsor.
Got a couple of kids that are big gamers, and I saw a YouTube video where the guy said that Eero wasn't great for gaming. Is it better just to get a gaming router?
Yeah. I don't know if that's the case, but I wouldn't be surprised because Eero is doing a lot of network management stuff. And so there are routers that are designed for gaming. Since you're a sophisticated networking guy, you understand the term QoS, quality of service.
Yes.
And there are routers that offer QoS settings for gamers. In other words, prioritizing the network traffic for the game. And the only reason you would do, usually in the old days, QoS was for things like packet voice switching. But you do QoS for gaming because if one packet is delayed and it's the pack where the guy comes around the corner and shoots at you, that's not good. So
right.
What you want to do is prioritize traffic for the gaming. The way that Eero and the other mesh routers work, they do use QoS, but you don't control it. So they may make decisions about QoS. For instance, I'm sure that they give QoS to streaming video devices. But that may. But if you've got a guy gaming on the network too, he may say, "What the heck? Oh, Dad's watching Netflix again," and so that's you want something that has control. Asus has a gaming router. There's ROG, the ROG routers that are for gaming, Republic of Gaming, that will let you set QoS to a specific port and say, look, this kid is gaming. You give him every packet he needs.
Yeah, the PCs that they have, I noticed on the network card settings, you could do some QoS there. It would prioritize, you know, whatever game you want to. So
yeah, but you have to do it at the router because the router is the one that's deciding where stuff goes.
Okay.
Right? Because it's so. If you think about it, packets are coming in, and unless this somehow it can communicate with the router and say, "Please send me stuff right away." Mm-hmm. Now, whether that makes a difference in gaming, I don't know, but I could at least theoretically, I can understand why that would be an issue.
Yeah, it's probably just for the particular PC they're on.
I game on my Eero all the time. I play Fortnite. Of course, I get killed so fast, I probably wouldn't notice if there's a problem. But
that's what they play, the Fortnite game.
Yeah, I think Fortnite is not particularly demanding, believe it or not. The Epic's done a really good job. Look, they put it on a Switch. They put it on iPhones. They've been done a really good job of making that game survive less than optimal network. So now your kid may say, Dad, I keep getting waxed. What's going on? It's your fault. So, there's a certain amount of magical thinking in all of this.
Yeah, they've complained a few times of some network lag, but I've got a pretty good router already. It's a Linksys router.
So it may well be that plenty of gamers will blame network lag on getting sniped. The darn network! It's the network's fault, Dad.
Right, but I'm sure loving those Eeros and all they can do.
Oh, I really do. I do like what they
do. Trying to balance that against dedicated gaming router.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy with the Eeros, and I use it for everything. But they do some management of the network. All the mesh routers do some management of the network, and you don't really get to tell them, as far as I can remember on any of them, hey, this is a gaming machine. It should notice. I mean, in theory, if it's doing management, it should say, well, I know Dad's watching Netflix, but this guy's playing Fortnite and he's really getting creamed. We should really give him better traffic. Yeah. But whether it does that, I don't know. I can't say for sure. And you don't know either. You can't tell.
Okay.
All right. But yeah, a good. There are gaming routers. They're specific. That's the whole point. They do QoS, and you can say, you know, please, every packet that's going to Fortnite needs to get there fast. On to line three, John in Temecula, California. Hello, John.
Hey, Leo. It's great to talk to you again.
Thanks for calling.
I really enjoyed your show. Just thanks. I got my Gear S3 on your advice, and I'm loving it on my wrist right now. My question for you today, you know how people are always calling for a friend? In this case, I'm actually calling for a friend. We got bit by... your computer has a virus. Please call this.
Oh, your friend got bit. Oh,
yes, and I'm on my way to see how bad the damage is.
So here's the risk. So when it says that, that's you already know fake.
Right. So here's the stage we're at in, Leo. She called the customer. Of course, they're from the Microsoft team.
Yeah, I'm calling from Windows, and your computer has a virus on it. And you need to give me $300 and access to your computer so I can fix it. And then you do that, and you don't know what. First of all, you're out $300. Now they have your credit card number, and you don't know what they did to your computer.
That's right. And let me just say, you're criminally underrated for your impressions, by the way.
I used to do an Indian guy, then I realized that's not right. So now I do Rosanna Dana.
That's
hello,
right.
This is Rosanna Dana calling because your computer is got a virus.
Dan, you incredible jackass. That's
my Dana. Never mind. Yeah. No, you don't. Once she gives.
Here's where she is.
Hold on a sec, because I'm going to have to take a break. But just for everybody else, I'll talk to you off the air. But bottom line on this is, once you give somebody access to your computer, you don't know what they've done. And it's very difficult to say with any certainty, I fixed it. You know, that's the problem. They can put a rootkit on there that you can't see. You can use malware bytes in every piece of software you've got, and it's still infected. You got to wipe the drive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, so did she give the guy access?
The guy installed GoToAssist.com, and basically downloaded that software, but she got very suspicious and turned the computer off immediately after that got downloaded.
Okay, she's probably all right. So GoToAssist or any remote access program can be used because GoToAssist is like he's on the computer. He asked her probably for a Windows password. He had to in order to install GoToAssist. So he's on the computer just as if he was sitting right in front of it.
Right, and but we killed the computer. It's off, and we have the network cable disconnected.
Yeah, you're probably all right.
I'm thinking either Bitdefender or AVG.
No. He didn't. As long as he, it depends when she said, because as long as he installed it but didn't get to run it, did she see him moving the mouse around?
That I do not.
So you ask her that. How okay. long? Between the time he got GoToAssist going and he got access to your computer and the time you disconnected, how long was that? If she saw the mouse moving around, and it would take him a little while, she'd see some stuff going on. If she got cold feet, like the minute he started getting access, she's fine. You don't have to. No antivirus is going to help you if she's got bad stuff on there, and he didn't have time to put bad stuff on there. So
okay, yeah. Great. So I had her go on to a Verizon-connected second computer and change the password to her bank account.
Perfect.
So that's done. Anything else that you
No.
think?
No. It really comes down to how long did he have access. And if he didn't have access for very long, I think she's fine.
Okay, last question. On an ongoing basis, what are you recommending as far as just malware, ransomware?
I don't recommend any malware software. If she's running Windows 10, she's got Microsoft's admittedly skinny Defender, but it's fine. It's as good as anything else is. If she's running Windows 7, download Security Essentials. And the reason is, I'll give you an example of Avast, a free, very popular antivirus. All sorts it becomes a portal in some cases, if there's a bug in it, that lets other people in. So it's dangerous to put antiviruses on there. It gives you a false sense of security. She's going to say, I'm safe. I can let this guy fix my computer. It isn't safe. The best antiviruses only catch about half of the viruses that come in over the transom. So really what you have to do is train her to develop that instinct that she had when she disconnected him. She has to be cynical. She shouldn't download software from anybody. If she sees a pop-up, she should always suspect it. She shouldn't click links in email. She shouldn't click links in Messenger. She shouldn't click links on Facebook. You want somebody to be very suspicious of everything.
Well, fantastic. Thanks a lot. So I gave her a B- as far as the grade goes.
She backed out. That's the good news.
All right. And is there anything I can look forward to on your show for VR? Is there any new VR stuff you're going to be doing either on the web or live that I can tune into?
Periodically, the new Screensavers is the show to watch. Periodically, we'll cover AR and VR. We did last week, for instance, a new medical device that uses AR to diagnose concussions. So if you're interested in that, we aren't doing a lot of VR. It's hard to cover VR. And and frankly, I'm not sure VR is going anywhere. It hasn't changed that much. So if it is, it'll be on the new Screensavers Saturday afternoons.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your work. I don't care what they say about you out there, Leo. You're doing a great job.
What are they saying?
You know that better. You know, everyone is saying everything about everyone, and you know that.
I don't go on Twitter for that very reason. Yeah. Thanks, John.
You rock.
See
ya.
Take care. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, live from the Disco Arena, beautiful downtown New York City, it's the dance stylings of Dick DiBartolo, Mad's Maddest Rider, and the Gizwiz. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, I was disco dancing at Lincoln Center.
What?
On Thursday.
What was going on?
Leo, I have never heard of, have you ever heard of silent disco?
Oh, yes. That's so much fun. And
it is amazing.
And you look so stupid.
Yes, people walking by go, what? Why?
So they'll have a DJ, and everybody in the audience is wearing headphones.
Yes.
And the DJ is playing music. You put on the headphones, it's as if you're at a disco. It's loud. It's, you know,
well,
pumping.
it's three DJs.
Yes, and you could change the channel.
Exactly. So if you see one of your friends, and they're dancing, and their headphone is blue, and your headphone is red, you click the side of it, and when your headphone turns blue, you're both on the same DJ
channel. Oh,
yeah,
what
it was great. It was just great.
Oh, what fun! Yeah, that's a very popular thing to do now at festivals. Like if you go to concerts, you know, where they have a lot of bands, they'll always have a silent disco booth.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Lincoln Center to do silent opera because I'm not a big. A big opera fan, so
you'll listen to the disco while
the disco music while the opera's going on.
I don't know what that fat lady's singing about, but I'm sure enjoying the Bee Gees. So Dick joins us every week. He's a gizmo fanatic. That's why we call him the Gizwiz. He's a gizzard of the wizard. No, that's not it. But every week he brings us something fun or interesting.
You know what? Something new from Bose. They had a press event last week, and it's not a noise reduction unit. They're getting into helping people sleep because
could use that, man.
Exactly. Okay. So they developed a new technology called noise masking. Okay. So they had found everything that annoys people at night. And the frequency, people snoring, some construction, if you're traveling, the elevators, the vending machines, the ice machines. And they started developing tracks that can find those same frequency and play whatever track you've picked. And they're not music tracks. You can have streams or crickets or water or fire crackling. But it will mask the sound that is annoying you. But the amazing thing is, I was talking to the CEO, and he said, Dick, this is the smallest device we have ever made because it has to fit totally within the earlobe because a lot of people sleep on their side.
No, I can't wear earbuds because it hurts my ear. So if this is inside the ear, okay.
Yes, and it has a little tab that goes up to hold it in place because he said we also have to worry about the tossers and turners who all over the place.
I'm a tosser and so, for sure, yeah.
Yes. And Leo, they did something very unique. They went on Indiegogo. Only they wanted to get 3,000 people to try some pre-production models and get their feedback. And so he said we couldn't give them away because then what kind of feedback is that? I think they gave them 40% off. And I believe they sold the 3,000 units, I think he said, in 6 hours.
See, I would have done that to help them make something useful.
Yes,
I think that's,
yes. And then it ended, and they shipped the units, and they told the people that we will keep upgrading the software. If it turns out we come up with something that is better than what we sold you and we can't upgrade yours, we'll just send you the new model and you send the old one back. So they're still expensive. They're $249.95. Bose is shipping them now, and I looked on Amazon. Amazon said they'll start shipping them, I think, July 5th.
So these do not hook up to your iPod. You can't listen to.
They do nothing, Leo, because the battery in there, I think it was 16 hours on one charge.
Wow.
And then the case that they ship in will charge it one more time for another 16 hours so that you can use them on trips and for travel.
But they only play the music that's built into the device. That's
exactly right. Because the engineer told me, he said, Dick, think of a penny and then reduce it by about 90%. And that's the area we were working with for the part that fits in your ear.
Wow.
And in there is the battery and the antenna. And, you know, it's wireless everywhere, wireless between the ears and to the app. And you set your alarm. And then when the alarm rings, only you hear it because it's ringing in your ear.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
It's
very
like clever.
Rustling leaves is like this, rainfall.
Yes, exactly.
See, if I had this,
I'd
have to get up a lot.
Or the Gizwiz podcast.
Or the Gizwiz podcast.
Yes,
guaranteed.
Instant sleep.
Put you
instant
to sleep.
Sleep.
You'll find that at gizwiz.tv, and you'll find a link to the Bose, what do they call them, the Sleep Buds?
Sleep Buds.
Sleep Buds. Sleep Buds. At Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. You know, this, boy, if they weren't $250, I'd be very tempted. That's a lot of money. I guess, though, well, that's how much it costs to make something like this, right?
Yeah. It is astounding. And you know what? You should check. Probably have a 30-day guarantee or something.
Oh, yeah. There
I mean, if you're going to sleep, if you're going to sleep.
I'd pay $250 bucks if I knew I would sleep better. Yeah. That would be worth it, right?
Yeah. Yep. If not, Three Stooges, I'll come over with a big hammer.
Yuck, 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 yuck. Dick DiBartolo, gizwiz.biz is his website. Go there to find out more about the sleep buds, but also to play the... Does it sound like it's raining in here?
It does.
I think we should have fixed the roof.
Also, well, you had to move in on a certain date.
Yeah, notice. Yeah, they had us move in during a dry week. If you go there, you can also play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, autographed by somebody you may know and love. And but all you have to do is identify. This is it. Tomorrow's the last.
It's going to end at midnight tonight. Exactly.
Oh, get in. Do you have any right answers yet?
I do. I started looking at them this morning. I have a couple people who nailed it.
Although there's more Mad Magazines for the funny ones. Yeah, so exactly. Yeah, don't feel like you have to get it right. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. I'll see you next week.
Take the rain with you. What is it? 95 degrees in Gizmoland?
It's like 92. It's going to be 98 tomorrow.
Holy cow.
Bye. Oh,
thank you, Dickie D. Last call of the day. Earl, Alpine, California. Hello, Earl.
Hello. I've got a iMac and a Samsung phone. And when I get it, I got an email this morning. And I phoned the guy and talked to him. Then I got another email, and it shows it's two coming from him. However, the second one's not from him. And it'll be some gobbledygook that makes no sense at all.
But it's in the thread? Like it's...
Yeah, it was like if you email me and I email you, it shows like there's two. And then you email me again, it shows three. Then I get one that shows four, and it's somebody entirely different.
Boy, I don't know why that would be. You got me, Earl. I have no idea. You know, it's supposed to, what it's looking at, it's supposed to look at is this the sender's address. And usually it looks at, I can't remember if Gmail does this, the sender's address and then the subject line. And then it assumes because those both match, oh, this is part of a conversation. But somehow they seem to be getting mushed up together. And I'm not sure what that is unless your friend's computer, you know, got messed up and is somehow sending more messages from the same address. I would check the sending address, make sure it's not your friend's. That's all I could think of. Hey, we're out of time, but I do thank you for joining me. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.